Our next guest is a retired physician who spends at least part of his year in Stonington, Maine. He's the author of a really terrific new book entitled At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life. Samuel Harrington joins us. Dr. Harrington, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, Rich, thank you very much for having me. Please call me Sam.
Well, Sam, I love the book. It was fascinating. And of course, it's a topic that very few people are comfortable talking about. But one of the points that you make throughout the book is how important it is for all of us to share our vision for the end of our life with family and friends.
Exactly. It is very uncomfortable, even for me, talking with my father, and we had a very open relationship in this regard. When we got down to the nitty-gritty, it became increasingly uncomfortable. But I think having a vision is a way of opening that conversation, because even though the vision, I mean, just a minimal expression of a vision about how one would prefer to die opens the conversation to make other points and make other decisions.
When is a good time to have these conversations?
Well, any time, but I think, people should really start throughout their life with their family and their children, when they're young adults. There's no particular time, but it does become very important when dealing with a person who's aging and will be facing rapid-fire decisions as diseases progress. So starting earlier is better, but facing the important decisions later usually works out.
I thought it was a very interesting, you distinguish in the book between terminal illness, a phrase that doctors sometimes are loath to use, and a terminal condition.
Yes, I do. I think I don't think most people make that distinction, but I think it's quite possible to say to yourself, or say to oneself, or as a physician, to look at a patient and say, all right, this diagnosis is going to be the cause of their death later. This is a terminal diagnosis. But the terminal condition comes on when that disease has progressed. So I use an example in my book of a woman who came to me, and we made a very surprise diagnosis of widespread breast cancer. And I just knew that she was going to die from this disease, whether it was in 3 years or 5 years. But we didn't think of it as, we thought of it as a terminal diagnosis, but we didn't think of it as a terminal condition until several years later when the disease had relapsed and treatments were failing.
You said, too, that doctors can sometimes be like generals and use all of the weapons at their disposal. But when that happens, too, the patients can sometimes be, I guess, for lack of a better term, the collateral damage in all of this.
Exactly. A serious complication will shorten one's life depending on when we use aggressive treatments. But I use that analogy that doctors are like generals on a war footing, because it is completely appropriate for us to use overwhelming force when we are dealing with a disease that can be cured or a patient that is young. But when we're dealing with an elderly patient who is dying of an advanced illness plus old age, or perhaps dying simply of old age, that is not an appropriate use time to use excessive force, and that kind of excessive treatment ultimately will morph into futile treatment, and futile treatment is cruel and wrong.
Hi, Dr. Harrington. This is Kerry Haskell. I had a question sort of related to that. What is the role of the doctor in getting the patient's feedback on what type of how aggressive, especially the older patients, how aggressive they want the treatments to be at later points in their life?
Well, I would like to think that a doctor's role is absolutely primary in that, and that it is our responsibility to sound out patients on the subject, even those patients who don't want to share it. But the fact is that most patients don't want to get into details, and it is easier for doctors to finesse that conversation than to undergo it. So it is easier to quote, offer hope by more treatment. And the path of least resistance in the United States is to treat and ultimately to treat excessively.
We're talking with Samuel Harrington. His book is called At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life. You use the story of your own mother and father to help help us view this through the lens of your own personal experience. From that personal level, did that make it more difficult for you to write this story?
No, in fact, it sort of released me. I'd been struggling trying to write the story, to write the book, because I had, as a young physician, I had matured into an older physician, from a young physician who was focused on technological skills to somebody who had observed his parents age and then dwindle and die at the same time that medicine was morphing from a healing art until at the end of my career it had become a large commercial enterprise. And during this process, I matured and came to the feeling that comfort care at the end of life, and by that I mean nursing care and support, emotional support, are more important than my technological skills. So when my father had passed away, I sat down and pounded out about 60% of the book because I knew I had something to say, and he had shown me a good deal of the way.
And for people to go home, to leave a hospital, to leave a facility and go home, it's not just going home to die. It's really, as you say, going home to take control.
I feel that's the case. Of course, going home usually or ideally will involve hospice care. And when you go home and go into hospice care, you have the opportunity to make your own decisions. You have taken the controls away from the physician and the systems that are in place in a hospital to get their best results. But those systems don't necessarily work for a given elderly individual, whereas at home, you set up your own emotional support system, you get your own family, friends, system of caregivers, and working within the concept that hospice is an alternative medical system that protects you from one from the test and treat emphasis we have in standard medical care. It's really a protective process.
Yeah, and as you point out, hospice is a way of avoiding that excessive care.
Exactly. Hospices have a supply equipment and medication, et cetera, at home with a forward-looking approach, anticipating problems, supplying a mattress to prevent bed sores, for example, supplying oxygen for the potential of becoming short of breath, so that when something occurs at home, you don't have to call 911 and get, in a sense, carted off to an emergency room. You have hospice people to call on, and they can tell you what to do with the medications you have in your house while they organize more help and a potential visit to analyze your situation.
From your years dealing with patients at the end of their life, do you find that there are some pretty common themes about how people would like their life to end?
Well, actually, I think everybody's vision is very individual. My father's vision, for example, was to let an aortic aneurysm rupture. Well, that's an extremely painful situation, but death is quick and certain if you decline emergency surgery and take palliative medication, pain medication, which was his plan. So that's not very few people would embrace that particular vision. But the vision of dying at home or dying in one's sleep is quite common. But again, visions are individual. Mm. But where it's been studied and dissected, the attributes of a good death include these five components. One, control is the most important. Then comfort, closure, meaning the opportunity to reconcile with family and friends. Affirmation, meaning having your ideals and values appreciated, and trust, meaning you've surrounded yourself with a comfortable environment. And so if you can, those can form a common understanding of what a good death is, or at least a better death. And if you flip those and think of helplessness, isolation, frustration, and denial, that pretty much describes what death is like in an intensive care unit.
Well, this really is a wonderful book. It would be a great conversation starter for families. It's something that we're all going to deal with, either as caregivers or certainly in our own lives, and I could not recommend it enough. At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life, Samuel Harrington, MD. Sam, thank you so much for your work on this and for being with us today.
Rich, I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.